That was Rich Volo and Rob Bouillon. You've been listening to Talk with Tanner, and I will talk to you soon. Don't forget to vote.
Hi, this is John Hall. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 Acre.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Devon of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Albany Times-Union that former Rensselaer County District Attorney Joel Abelov was back before an appellate court October 7th, defending himself again on perjury and official misconduct charges related to his handling of a 2016 fatal police shooting in Troy. Last June, State Supreme Court Justice Jonathan D. Nichols dismissed the case, saying the perjury charge Abelov got for false statements he made before a grand jury prejudiced the panel on its decision on official misconduct charges. Nichols also ruled that the State Attorney General's office did not have the statutory jurisdiction to prosecute Abelov on the perjury charges. Abelov lost re-election to a second term last year after the judge dismissed the charges. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union.
Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. First responders in Greene County will be using a more powerful communication system by the end of the week. County lawmakers were updated on the new high-bandwidth radio system on October 2nd. Greene County Emergency Services Deputy Director Randy Omerod said this switch has been several years in the making. Emergency medical services personnel and law enforcement made the switch to the new system September 10th. On October 9th, fire departments will make the changeover. Public Safety Chairman William Lawrence asked if Greene County EMS would continue running the low-band and high-band systems concurrently. Emergency Manager Specialist Daniel King said the low-band system would remain in effect for about 30 to 60 days. The cost of going high-band varies by department size, King said. He said, and I quote, it's about $200 to $500 per radio, end quote. The transition from low-band to high-band was part of a four-year communications overhaul at the dispatch center. The upgrade cost about $2 million, with radio upgrade costing $750,000. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Sarah Trafton reports for Columbia Green Media that Carrotown board member Jason Watts voted in August for a resolution authorizing a $50,000 federal housing and urban development grant from 1998 to be given to the Caro Development Foundation for low-income housing. Watts voted and did not recuse himself on the issue, even though he has done work for the Caro Development Foundation, and says they still owe him money. In 2017, there was a similar issue in Caro, with another town board member not recusing themselves in an obvious conflict of interest. A neighbor of Watts, town board member Doug Ostrander, filed a lawsuit against him and then refused to recuse himself when a vote on the issue with Watts came before the board, even though that was an obvious conflict of interest. At that time, Watt said he would recuse himself from voting on the issue. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Bethany Bumpus reporting for the Times Union. A new Siena poll has found the majority of New Yorkers believe vaping is a serious public health problem, and they support the effort to ban flavored e-cigarettes. The number of people with that opinion has increased from 68% to 78%. And while 61% say they support a ban on flavored vape products, 52% say they support banning all e-cigarette products. Don Levy, director of Siena's Research Institute, said, and I quote, "The degree to which, in a really short time, people see vaping as a problem stands out a lot to me. It's a dramatic increase," end quote. Bump writes that opposition to the practice is likely due to news of a multi-state outbreak of lung illnesses affecting people who use electronic cigarettes. 18 people have died so far, and more than 1,000 have been hospitalized, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. More than 800 New Yorkers responded to the Siena survey, conducted from September 22nd to October 1st. The poll included questions on a range of public health issues, including marijuana, opioids, alcohol, and tobacco. The majority of the residents continue to support the legalization of marijuana for recreational use. Siena also found that opioid addiction remains a top concern for state residents. Survey takers ranked it as the state's most serious public health problem, and 62% said they have been touched by opioid abuse in some way or another, up from 54% last year. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Chuck Schumer won't say how he will vote if an impeachment trial reaches the Senate. Quote, "Don't take a position," the New York State senator advised other senators on October 7th. Quote, "A good conscientious juror doesn't take a stand. They wait until all the facts are presented. That's what I am doing, and I believe every senator, Democratic and Republican, should do the same," unquote. He does agree with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's decision to open an impeachment inquiry. Quote, "I think Nancy Pelosi is pursuing it in the right way," unquote, Schumer said. Quote, "She's trying to be fact-driven," unquote. Locally, Representatives Paul Tonko, Antonio Delgado, and Sean Patrick Maloney have all come out in favor of the impeachment inquiry in the House. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
MidHudsonNews.com is reporting Ulster County Democratic Party Chairman Frank Cardinale, October 4th, called on County Legislator Hector Rodriguez to resign immediately after an independent investigation by an Albany law firm found that he used his position as a public official to make unwanted and inappropriate advances towards women. Cardinale called upon Rodriguez to step down from the county and state Democratic committees as well. County Executive Patrick Ryan, also a Democrat, said had the actions involved any member of his administration, the findings would have led to, and I quote, "a summary dismissal," end quote. He said the New Platts Democrat, and I quote, "violated the public trust, violated women, and is unfit for public service," end quote. Ryan also urged the legislature to take action to condemn Rodriguez's behavior. Rodriguez did not respond to a request for comment. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that Ulster County legislator Hector Rodriguez is refusing to resign even after being removed from the legislature's two most powerful committees. An independent investigator found that sexual harassment allegations against the New Paltz Democrat were, quote, credible, unquote, and in violation of county policy. Now several legislators, the New Paltz Village Board and the Ulster County Democratic Committee, are among those calling for Rodriguez to resign. Democrats removed him from the Laws and Rules Committee and Ways and Means Committee on October 7th. He gets to stay on the legislature's Economic Development, Tourism, Housing, and Planning Committee, as rules require legislators to be on at least one committee. On October 7th, Rodriguez said, quote, "It is my intent to serve the remaining 84 days left in my term," unquote, until December 31st. The independent investigator talked with 11 women who said they had been subjected to behaviors and conduct by Rodriguez that they found troubling. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Emma Emily Saul is reporting for the New York Post. A federal judge in Manhattan October 7th dismissed the lawsuit filed by President Donald Trump to block the New York District Attorney's Office from obtaining his financial records. Trump sued in September to stop enforcement of a subpoena for 8 years of his personal and corporate documents, including tax returns. The subpoena was obtained as part of a criminal grand jury investigation. Trump's legal counsel argued that he was protected by total immunity while in office. Federal Judge Victor Marrero wrote in a 75-page ruling, and I quote, "The court cannot endorse such a categorical and limitless assertion of presidential immunity. The court cannot square a vision of presidential immunity that would place the president above the law with the text of the Constitution," end quote. Trump immediately filed an emergency appeal with the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, asking the appellate court reinstate the lawsuit and issue a temporary restraining order to stop the DA from executing the subpoena. Read the full story in the New York Post.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 63 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly clear with a low of around 44. And on Wednesday, a slight chance of showers, partly sunny with a high near 59 degrees. Wednesday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low of around 44. So there you have your weather update, brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM Radio for Open Ears in Greene and Columbia Counties.
Listen out for these live broadcasts and extra web streams on the WGXE program schedule during the coming week. On Friday, October 11th, from 7 to 8 p.m., tune in for a special remote broadcast of Sound Art Revisited, a discussion with author and musician Alan Licht, with a panel featuring composer and sound artist Anaya Lockwood, Wave Farm Executive Director Galen Joseph Hunter, Wave Farm Artist-in-Residence Grant Smith, and sound artist and educator Zach Poff. The event, which takes place at Time and Space Limited in Hudson, will be broadcast live on WGXC 90.7 FM and streamed live online at wavefarm.org/listen. On Friday, October 11th, from 9 to 11 p.m., WGXC Live will carry a live stream from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Performing will be Mother Fletcher with an eclectic and unique mix of ska, rock, and reggae. Tune in to 90.7 FM to hear it on the air, or go to WGXC.org, click on Listen at the top of the page, and scroll down to find the live web stream. See theavalonlounge.com for more information. On Saturday, October 12th, starting at 10 p.m., WGXC Live will carry a live stream from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. In the first of a series of community dance parties called Pan-African Jam, DJ Neva of WGXC's Music for the Masses brings Felebration, a worldwide birthday party for Fela Anikolapo Kuti, to Catskill with a night of Afrobeat from all corners of the globe. The event will feature a jam session with local percussionists. There should be a live web stream at WGXC.org after 10 p.m. Click on Listen at the top of the page and scroll down to find the live web stream. The show will also air on 90.7 FM after midnight. See theavalonlounge.com for more information. Be sure to check our program schedule for new listings of public events, community meetings, and other dedicated web streams, which may not have been posted at the time this announcement was recorded. You can also download the free Wave Farm app to listen on your phone or iDevice, or use it to become a broadcast partner with WGXC.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
On Wednesday, October 9th, a Hudson Housing Authority meeting will be held at Bliss Towers, 41 2nd Street, at 6 p.m. On Thursday, October 10th, a collaboration with the City of Hudson Senior Center and the Hudson Area Library will focus on discovering the power of the inner self through the practice of daily writing. Taught by author, artist, educator, and social activist Maureen McNeil. Registration is limited at programs@hudsonarealibrary.org and is on a first-come, first-served basis. Congressperson Antonio Delgado will be interviewed by K.T. Tobin, Associate Director of the Benjamin Center at the State University of New York at New Paltz, from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. The focus of this public conversation will be on Congressperson Delgado's early experience in Congress and his priorities going forward as he represents and serves constituents in his 11-county district. There will be time for questions from the audience. Undocumented Immigrants, Struggles in Our Time, Documentary and Discussion, sponsored by the Mountaintop Immigrant Support Network and held at the Mountaintop Library in Tannersville from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Congressional leaders still are trying to hammer out a new trade agreement with Canada and Mexico, and there's a lot on the line for workers in New York. The United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA, would replace the 1994 agreement known as NAFTA. Nearly 800,000 New York jobs are supported by exports within North America, and about one-fifth of the state's total exports are sent to Canada and Mexico. Ford Motor Company's president of automotive, Joe Henricks, explains the trade deal is especially crucial for the auto industry, which depends on the free flow of trade between the three countries.
So for our workforce, where one out of six vehicles produced in the United States are exported outside the U.S., having a competitive USMCA agreement ratified and certified so we can plan the business is very important to our manufacturing footprint and to our employees.
Ford alone exports 380,000 American-made vehicles each year. It's estimated that the USMCA will result in $34 billion in new investments for the auto industry and could create 76,000 new automotive jobs over 5 years. The deal raises the minimum wage and creates and protects manufacturing jobs by offering companies incentives for engineering and production in the U.S. Henrik says that's good news for the 1,100 Ford employees in New York.
We support the USMCA because it's good for the U.S. auto industry, our suppliers that fuel our success, and the workers and families who depend on a strong Ford in this country.
Henricks also believes the agreement will modernize policies to match the ways that auto manufacturing, supply chains, and the workforce have evolved in the 25 years since NAFTA took effect.
Let's get this planned. Let's get it approved so we can run our business plan for the future and continue to invest in America.
Mexico has already ratified the agreement. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce is calling for lawmakers to approve the deal by the end of November, with hopes that Canada will ratify it around the same time. This is Mary Sherman, New York News Connection.
WGXC welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXC, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXC and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-WGXC. 1-800-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXC. 518-291-9492.
Amy Rigby's setting up here in the studio, getting a guitar tuned and ready to go. All right, well, you've got a guitar. You want to play one of the songs off the new record?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Which one are you going to play?
I was going to play something mellow, but maybe I should play something more, you know, to kind of like get moving a little. I think I will. I was talking about like people that have helped and inspired me, and so I wrote this song for one of, you know, one of the producers that I got to work with, and who just, you know, just like it's. I don't know if anyone, like, if you'll keep going, if there isn't a person who tells you, like, you know, like you're good, you know, just like you're doing something that's good, and someone who you look up to, who you feel like has done something themselves. People, young people need that, you know, like encouragement. You can't just get it all from inside, or if you are, you're just like a much more incredible person than I am. So anyway, there'll never be another you. There'll never be another you. One off. There'll never be another you. There'll never be another you. One off. And when we all get together, we can laugh about the things you said. You made this cruel world better, made me wish that you could be my dad. The way you talked, how it sounded, it was deep, it was nothing at all. When you called, you called, you called, you called, you called, you called. There'll never be another you. There'll never be another you. One off. There'll never be another you. There'll never be another you. One off. And when I look at your picture, I can feel it like I felt back then. If you said that it mattered, well, it did, yeah, I remember when. The day we met, you were older, you had lived, you were halfway through. And you knew, you knew, you knew, you knew, you knew, you knew. Don't have to go to the mountain like the mountain, you were already there. And you cared, you cared, you cared, you cared, you cared, you cared. There'll never be another you. There'll never be another you. There'll never be another you.
All right, the crowd went wild.
Can
for that
I
one.
Rent one of those from you? Yes, we'll put a mic on it.
Tommy Simpson from The Replacements now lives in Hudson. Here's Satellite from The Replacements, sung by Tommy Simpson.
Good. If you can't make your local town meetings but want to attend, WGXC can help. Currently, local volunteers make recordings and live web streams of the Catskill Town Meetings, the Hudson Common Council Meetings, and the Columbia County Board of Supervisor Meetings. If you miss the live web streams, volunteers post recordings of these meetings as soon as possible at WGXC.org on the newsroom page and in the audio archives. If you're going to local meetings and you have a phone in your pocket, you can help too. Email info@WGXC.org and WGXC will help you share recordings of local meetings and events. You can also use the free WGXC app, available in the App Store, to do your own live webcast from local events. Contact info@WGXC.org for more information about how you can help share valuable local information about your community with your friends and neighbors.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Regarding the Dunscammer project, perhaps you'd like to give us a bit of information about it, if you don't mind, Haley.
Sure. In a nutshell, Dunscammer is an existing, very old, 65-plus-year-old power plant on the Hudson River in the town of Newburgh that barely runs anymore. It only runs a couple of days a year because it's so old and inefficient and dirty. The owner of the plant, however, is proposing to build a brand new natural gas-fired power plant right next door to the old one, a large power plant. And unlike the existing plant, the new one would be what they call a baseload facility, meaning it would run basically 24/7 as part of the backbone of the electric grid. As a consequence, this would increase air emissions, including greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and other things like ozone precursors that cause respiratory illnesses. It would continue to create a blight right on the shores of the Hudson River at the gateway to the Hudson Highlands. It would have the potential to contaminate water with the diesel fuel and other hazardous substances that would be stored on site. And perhaps most importantly, it would be a huge investment.
Kenny from Athens. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now. WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York.
Wavefarms WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Wavefarm Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Alfdemar and Tony Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, October 8, 2019. I'm Eric Tegedoff. President Trump's plan to withdraw troops from Syria gets bipartisan pushback, and groups rally for voting rights of former felons in key battleground state Florida. Republicans and Democrats alike criticized President Trump's plans to withdraw troops from Syria's border with Turkey, fearing it could clear the way for a Turkish military operation in the embattled country. Republicans, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, believe the move could endanger national security and possibly provide an opportunity for Islamic State terrorists to regroup. In a strongly worded statement, McConnell added that a supermajority of senators disapproved of the abrupt action. Trump defended the move, saying it was time to get out of the region and let others figure it out. Voting and civil rights groups rallied outside a federal court in Florida's capital Monday, calling for a temporary injunction to allow former felons to continue to register to vote. Tramell Gomes explains.
Last year, Florida voters overwhelmingly approved a constitutional amendment that allowed some 1.4 million felons to regain their voting privileges. But the state's Republican-controlled legislature passed a bill requiring all fines, restitutions, and other financial obligations be settled in order for felons to complete their sentences. Melber Pearson with the American Civil Liberties Union of Florida says their data shows only 20% of those people would meet that requirement. So about a million people still would be left without a vote.
It's a wealth-based system. If you have outstanding fines that were converted to a civil lien because the court determined you were never going to have the ability to pay, now you're in a situation where you're no longer eligible to vote. And that's just wrong.
Attorneys for the state argue that the added stipulations were reasonable interpretations of the language in Amendment 4, claiming the legislature also included the ability to seek waivers to some financial obligations.
One of the West's largest utility companies plans to close nearly two-thirds of its coal-fired power plants in Wyoming early.
PacifiCorp's plan to retire coal-fired power plants is not as sweeping as first announced, but units at Naughton, Dave Johnston, and Jim Bridger, the biggest plant in the company's fleet, will all close earlier than once anticipated. PacifiCorp's decision was based on its obligation to provide customers electricity at the lowest cost possible. Christopher Thomas with the Sierra Club says it's an economic issue facing utilities across the nation. The costs of maintaining older coal units are significantly higher than switching to solar, wind, and battery storage.
We're seeing utilities take a second look at their coal plants and say, you know what, we can save our customers money by bringing some coal units offline sooner and replacing them with renewable technologies.
The 20-year energy plan is expected to be officially filed with the Wyoming Public Service Commission on October 18th.
That was Eric Gladys reporting. This is PNS. This weekend, tours of West Virginia solar sites helped illuminate how sunlight might make more electricity here and help power the state's economy.
Monongalia delegate Evan Hansen says the solar tour brought about 20 people to see the panels on the roof of his small business. He plans to pay off the cost of installation in about 10 years, and after that, he expects to get free power for decades. Hansen says he told the visitors they could do the same, although some federal solar tax breaks are set to expire if Congress doesn't act to extend them.
If you install solar on your rooftop, you could save money over the long term. And the longer you wait, the less money you may save.
More than 850 solar-powered homes and businesses around the country, nearly 80 in West Virginia, opened their doors for visitors over the weekend. Dan Hyman reporting.
A new study examines the risks faced by unaccompanied youths in Michigan who are homeless and identifies potential strategies to ensure their health and safety. Mary Sherman reports.
There are more than 4,800 unaccompanied youth in Michigan's K-12 schools who, in a new report, shows are vulnerable to untreated mental health issues, physical victimization, and sexual exploitation. Parker James is with the Michigan League for Public Policy, which released the report.
We want to make sure kids are economically secure, that they're healthy, that they're safe, and that they have a supportive family and community. And all of those things are really hard to do if you don't have a place to stay.
According to the findings, Black, Latinx, transgender, and gender nonconforming youths are overrepresented among youths under age 24 accessing homeless services. The league has a new tool to help those who work with these youths and young adults to examine the demographics of the homeless population and determine the number of unaccompanied youths in their intermediate school district.
With states and local elections in Virginia less than a month away, AARP Virginia says it's prime time for voters to get candidates to address retirement security issues.
The typical working household nearing retirement in the Commonwealth has a little over $14,000 in savings, says Natalie Snyder with AARP Virginia. That's compared to a national average of $100,000 just a few years ago, according to a Transamerica Center report. Snyder says the gap is setting older Virginians up for financial hardship.
So if you only got $14,000 saved up for retirement and you're spending $20,000 annually, that is not a sustainable ratio at all. Like, you can't even make it through your first year of retirement on that amount of money.
A work and save bill to create a voluntary retirement program in Virginia for people who otherwise don't have one through their workplace, similar to programs in Maryland and California, didn't pass last year's General Assembly.
That was Diane Bernard reporting. I'm Eric Tegedoff for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Crane. Bill Munson is reporting for the Times Union. Congressional representatives from upstate have joined the chorus of Republicans and Democrats criticizing the decision of President Donald Trump to pull U.S. troops out of northeastern Syria in advance of an expected attack by Turkey and the anticipated impact on Kurdish allies. Republican U.S. Representative Elise Stefanik of Schuylerville recently returned from a trip to Turkey and the Syrian-Jordanian border. Stefanik, in a joint statement issued along with four Democratic members of the House Armed Services Committee, called Trump's move, and I quote, a misguided and catastrophic blow to our national security interests, end quote. Democrat U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado of Rhinebeck said American troops' removal was, and I quote, deeply alarming, end quote. He told reporters, and I quote, making this move without warning, at least without appearance of any coordination with our other allies in the region, is reckless and dangerous, end quote. Senate Minority Leader Charles E. Schumer called the Kurds a key U.S. friend and ally. He said, and I quote, to abandon them would make no sense at all, when there's strong bipartisan opposition to that abandonment from Democrats and Republicans, and we're going to push the Trump administration to reverse its decision, end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union. The Daily Freeman is reporting former 19th Congressional District Representative Chris Gibson will join the Siena College faculty in September 2020 as a visiting professor in the political science and history departments. The college announced that Gibson, a graduate of Siena, will teach two courses per semester during his two-year visiting term. In a prepared statement, Gibson said Siena was strongly positioned to play a role in, and I quote, promoting political dialogue and respectful debate, end quote. The Kinderhook Republican served 3 two-year terms in the House before leaving politics in late 2016. In 2018, he ran Dutchess County Executive Marcus Molinaro's unsuccessful gubernatorial campaign. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was briefed October 7th at the Stewart Air National Guard Base about water contamination from the base. In 2014, PFOS contamination was detected in Lake Washington, the city of Newburgh's water supply. The source of the contamination was determined to have come from the foam used by base firefighters. A state of emergency was declared by the city manager in 2016, and the city now gets its water through the Catskill Aqueduct. Currently, an 8-week timeline is in place to establish a new filtration system at the base. Following the briefing, Gillibrand said, and I quote, "This is a good start, but any time you are talking about contaminants in water, it requires long-term monitoring, requires testing of wells, testing of different water systems. So this will be a collaboration between the military and the federal government, state, DEC, and local communities," end quote. PFOS is highly toxic and can cause kidney and testicular cancer, affect the liver, thyroid, immune systems, and fetus development. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Lombardo reports in the Albany Times-Union that U.S. District Senior Judge Gary L. Sharp issued an order this week putting a temporary pause on Rensselaer County Clerk Frank Marola's move to block a state law allowing undocumented immigrants to apply for driver's licenses. Rensselaer County will have to wait their turn, as Sharp ordered a stay of the case until a similar case filed about 2 weeks earlier in Erie County is heard later this month. If the law stands up in court, it would begin in December. The judge will hear from lawyers again in the Rensselaer County case November 1st if the Erie County case does not end first. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union. Ben Cesario is reporting for the New York Times. On Monday, October 7th, the nonprofit Pacifica Foundation, owner of New York's WBAI-FM, abruptly laid off most of the station's staff and replaced local programming with shows from Pacifica's other stations. On Tuesday morning, a Manhattan Supreme Court judge ordered Pacifica to put the station back into the hands of WBAI personnel and to restore its signal to the radio airwaves and the station's website. 10 of WBAI's 12 employees have been laid off, according to John Bernal, Pacifica's interim executive director. Berthold Reimers, WBAI's general manager, told producers in an email early Monday, and I quote, "There is a show on the air now that I do not recognize. This means your shows are no longer on WBAI," end quote. Pacifica leaders said the decision to shut down WBAI had been in the works for months, and that the step was needed to save the foundation from ruin. However, BAI employees and volunteer hosts said they were blindsided by the decision. Pacifica blamed the station's ongoing financial challenges for its decision to suddenly shut down the station. WGXC-FM is a member of the Pacifica Network, which is operated by the Pacifica Foundation and airs Off the Hook from WBAI. The Off the Hook Twitter account reported October 8th that a judge issued an injunction to put the station back on the air. And I quote, "We are happy to announce that at WBAI has gotten an injunction to stay the takeover of the station by at Radio Pacifica. All programming will resume and the next court date is October 18th, end quote. Off the Hook airs at 8 p.m. Wednesdays live on both WBAI and WGXC. Read the full story in the New York Times. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now here is your WGXC Hands-On Radio weather update. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a mostly sunny Tuesday afternoon with a temperature high near 67 degrees and a calm wind. Tonight it will be mostly clear with a low of around 45 degrees and a north wind at around 6 miles an hour. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, a slight chance of rain after 10 a.m. Patchy fog between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. Otherwise, it will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 60 degrees. Wednesday night, a slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a low of around 44. And on Thursday, a slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a high near 58 degrees. A slight chance of rain again on Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 45. So there you have your weather update, brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia County.
WGXC always needs computer donations.
If you have an old one you don't need and it is either a Macintosh 2011 or newer, 2.0 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer, 2.4 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info@wgxc.org for more information.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Justin of Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Here are the feature programs coming up on WGXC on Wednesday, October 9th. Start your day off with the WGXC Morning Show, hosted by Tom Rowe. In the second hour, Olympia Avignon of the Mountaintop Progressives Immigrant Support Network will talk about a screening of two short films, Undocumented Immigrants and Struggles in Our Time, with a presentation by Juan Flores of Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. Also at 7 p.m., Digging In with Master Gardeners, produced by Master Gardeners from Greene Columbia Cornell Cooperative Extension. In this broadcast, hosts Teresa and Jean discuss the problem of mediating the native versus invasive plant struggle with guest Timothy Kennelty, a fellow Master Gardener volunteer. To view the full programming schedule, make a one-time donation, or become a sustaining donor, visit our website, WGXC.org.
October 11th is the deadline to register for the November 5th town and county elections. This year, though, voting begins October 26th at a limited number of locations. Locally, Greene has one location in Catskill, while other voters registered in Columbia County have three locations to vote ahead of November 5th, the county office building in Hudson, the Martin H. Glenn Municipal Building in Valencia, and the Copeg Town Hall in Copeg. In southern Albany County, the Helderberg Ambulance site at 978 Coal Hill Road in East Bern will be set up for all voters registered in election districts in Bern, Knox, Rensselaerville, and Westerlo. The Bethlehem Lutheran Church at 85 Elm Avenue in Delmont will be for voters registered in Bethlehem, Coeymans, and New Scotland. In southern Rensselaer County, the Skodak Town Hall at 265 Sherman Road in Castleton-on-the-Hudson will be set up for early voting. To gain a political advantage, Republicans in the majority in Rensselaer County did not set up an early voting site in Troy, the county's largest city and home of more Democrats than GOP members.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Medea Benjamin is a longtime peace activist who's been on our show a number of times. She is co-founder of both Code Pink and Global Exchange. This week, she wrote an op-ed in Truthout about one way to fund saving the planet from climate change and economic inequality is to defund the Pentagon. So, Medea, what were some of the key points you made in the op-ed?
I talked about how the military actually protects big oil around the world, giving examples like the Gulf War in 91, the U.S. military support today for the Saudis, talked about how the Pentagon is the largest institutional consumer of fossil fuels. There was a great study that Brown University did that showed that if it were a country it would be the 47th largest country in terms of being on the list of greenhouse gas emitters. And I talked about the toxic legacy of the military operations. Many of former military bases are now Superfund sites. That's here in the United States where they get that category and hopefully money to clean them up. But around the world, there are toxic legacies of the U.S. military bases that don't get cleaned up, and on. So I gave 10 different ways that these things are intertwined.
Well, one of the points you made is that the climate crisis often makes wars even worse. And I know a number of people have made reference to Guatemala and our climate refugee issue, but certainly Syria, we saw the same thing. So, are those some of the examples of how climate is, forcing people to flee from war and actually, increasing the level of violence?
Absolutely. Some say that the Arab Spring was very intimately tied up with the climate issues because of climate change. There is less food available, and the price of basic commodities went up, and that led to the uprising that was initiated in Tunisia. We're not trying to say that these are these single factors, but these are some of the factors that are involved in causing people to flee their countries, to rise up. And we know with the millions of migrants and refugees from the climate that are happening, whether it's in sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America, and the effect that these have had in our own countries moving our many countries towards more right-wing nationalist governments that are anti-immigrant, you see a whole series of developments that can be linked back to climate change.
You made the point that, often we use our military forces to pursue the interests of big oil. Certainly, that was a major factor in the invasion of Iraq. But more recently, one of the issues we've had you on about has been the catastrophic situation in Yemen, and as part of that ongoing conflict against sort of the genocide being inflicted by Saudi Arabia, drones knocked out several parts of the Saudi Arabian, oil production facility. How is that going to escalate the war?
Well, there the escalation is already happening in terms of the climate issues in Yemen. Yemen is a very water-scarce country. In fact, the capital has had tremendous scarcities of oil. We also see how the war on Yemen has led to destruction of so much of the basic infrastructure, the water and the sewage. These things have led to the outbreak of cholera, over a million cases of cholera in Yemen. So the destruction goes on, and I think the continued dependence, not of the United States on Saudi oil, but the globe, and certainly our collective dependence on fossil fuels, has led to U.S. support for the Saudi regime, and the Saudi regime is the one doing most of the bombing and destruction in Yemen. So we could say that until we as a collective world community get off of the fossil fuel treadmill, we will find ourselves in bed with the most evil regimes in the world, including Saudi Arabia.
Now, the title, I guess, of the article was about, one way to save the planet, or the fund to save the planet, was to cut the military budget. How much money are we talking about, and is that sufficient to deal with the climate change issue?
Unbeknownst to most people in this country, over half of our discretionary funds, that means funds that the Congress can allocate to different issues, are spent on the Pentagon. And this is way above and beyond what the rest of the world spends on their militaries. In fact, you could cut the spending on the U.S. military in half, and you would still have a military that would be bigger than our major adversaries from China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea combined. That would be $350 billion, which could be put into the Green New Deal. It's the largest chunk of money in the Treasury that could easily be transferred. And not only that, it would make the U.S. more secure, because the more we're spending now on the Pentagon, the more inclined we are to get into military interventions, which not only bog us down and lead to death of the people whose countries we invade, as well as our soldiers, but it also contributes to this circle of the military-industrial complex. And so I think it's part of that use-it-or-lose-it kind of thing. If you have all these weapons, you'll look at the world in terms of military solutions instead of diplomatic ones. So right. Cutting $350 from the budget would be a major chunk of money to put into the environment and would make us more secure at home.
Well, we're beginning to run out of time. I was going to ask you about how does this whole militarization relate to the increasing use of violence against anti-corporate protesters across the planet. But on my Facebook feed on Wednesday, I noticed you were doing something out in front or near the Saudi embassy. What was that about?
Today marks the one-year anniversary of the death of the Saudi journalist for the Washington Post, Jamal Khashoggi. So we were out in front of the embassy commemorating the 1 year and announcing a boycott of Saudi Arabia campaign, which people can find out more going to our website, codepink.org. But it's an exciting campaign to try to get U.S. companies to sever their ties with the Saudi regime.
And about the issue of the violence against anti-corporate protesters, since we have about 90 seconds.
Well, yes, we find that our military is unfortunately being used both overseas against against environmentalists and military-type tactics being used against people who are working for the climate or other.